What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Blindside Blitz. I am Jim McPhee, and of course, alongside me right there is Mr. Joe DiCapita.
What's going on, Blitz Nation? Welcome back. I know we just got through it. We got through the whole season. We eclipsed it all through the regular season, in through the playoffs. We got ourselves a Super Bowl champion, being the Philadelphia Eagles. Congratulations to the Philadelphia Eagles. Saquon Barkley getting his first ring. And it was a, well, let's just say this. It was an ass whooping. That's really what it was. The Eagles really dominated the Chiefs. And some people were saying out there that that's what happens when the refs don't favor the Chiefs. You know, they just get beat up. So thank you guys for tuning in. Welcome to the show. We are going to do our own little Super Bowl review for you guys and a bunch more. But before we get to that, just want to welcome you. Head over to Grumblings Media to support our channel over on YouTube. Make sure you hit that subscribe button while you're there. Thumbs up, all that jazz. Share it to everybody you know. And don't forget, when we are live right now, so comment down below. We want to hear from all you guys about whatever we're talking about or if there's something that you guys want us to chat about. Let's do it. But you can follow us over there on YouTube, but also always anywhere you get your podcasts and also X.
Yeah, absolutely, Joe. So here we go. Super Bowl. It didn't play out exactly like I thought it would.
No.
But, you know, the Eagles, though, the game plan, they followed exactly what I thought they should do. So I was totally excited throughout the game. The fact that they were just containing Patrick Mahomes, keeping him in that tight pocket here, daring him to do something here to try and break out of that. He had nowhere to go, squeezed him out, popped him like a pimple. And even after the second half with that lead, still just kept to the same game plan. Didn't change anything up, didn't go relaxed or anything like that. I was proud of the Eagles and what they did again. And I'm a Giants fan, and I want to see the Eagles win another Super Bowl, but it was kind of for the greater good here. And it showed that the Eagles, overall, like we said again in our preview, they're just a better overall team. I mean, and defense wins championships. Number one ranked defense here going against the offense. We've seen this before in the past. When the number one offense goes against the number one defense, the defense wins. And this time, it wasn't even a number one ranked offense here going against this top ranked defense here, Vic Fangio, and what these guys have done here. Here's the stats even here of Vic Fangio and these guys here. 25 pressures, 11 QB hits, 6 sacks, 3 takeaways right there. I mean, all phases of the football, the Eagles just totally dominated the Kansas City Chiefs, which a lot of people expected or hoped to see, you know, a three-peat here out of the Chiefs.
Yeah, and they did something differently because they had the personnel to do it. They didn't blitz. Mm-hmm. Like, there was, like, there might have been one blitz, but for some reason, what was it, the next-gen stats didn't count it. It was weird.
I saw that because it looked like at the end they did kind of send some pressure.
Like, because Zach Bond blitzed up the middle.
Yeah.
So, and that's what I saw. But like for some reason they're reporting it as they didn't blitz at all. But whatever, touche. but what was different about this matchup too, defensively for Vic Fangio going up against Patrick Mahomes, having all the naysayers out there saying, "Well, you can't beat Mahomes because you're 0-7." What are you going to do differently this time? He only rushed 4. And he was able to do that because of the personnel that the Eagles had. They had the guys to do it and for everybody else to stay in coverage. It limited what the Chiefs were able to accomplish. And we said this from jump before the Super Bowl even got here. We said, listen, it's very simple. The Chiefs' offense love to do these short to intermediate routes. And a lot of them are behind the line of scrimmage. 27% is behind the line of scrimmage, those plays are. So the Eagles, they played pressure up front in their face. They were getting after Mahomes. And the key thing, too, that I'll say about this Eagles defense, that they've done better than anybody else, they tackled. That was a big, big problem for a lot of other defenses. They would miss tackles initially, and that would allow the Chiefs playmakers to get, you know, 5, 10, 15 yards, maybe even more after the catch. The Eagles were phenomenal at tackling, limiting everything that they had. Was it a 2-yard pass? Well, it stayed a 2-yard pass. You know, they were attacking. They were in their face, and they definitely executed at an extremely high level. Vic Fangio with a big, huge grin on his face at the end of that game. You know, this team came to play, and not only that, we did, like you mentioned earlier, that we envisioned this roster for the Eagles to overcome the Chiefs just because they don't have hardly any, if any, weaknesses. That they right. have depth.
And I said they have depth.
Really rooted in, and that was going to play a big part in this game, and it did. So it's going to be interesting to see now as we get to the off season now, because, oh my God, Jim, if you haven't seen the free agent list that the Eagles and the Chiefs are going to have to go through, a lot of there's probably on each list, there's like 6 or 7 big time names, starting caliber players that are due to be free agents. How many can they retain? Do they retain them all? Like, there's going to be a lot of big questions and decisions to make for both teams come offseason.
Yeah, I mean, and again, that's been the, you know, the headline with the Eagles for a lot of the season, too. Like, there's turmoil in the locker room. What are these guys doing? There's infighting. But they've gelled together. They kept it all together. They made it work. And here we go. There's even some stats here with the Eagles and what they did. Their second Super Bowl after a dominant performance here against the Chiefs. And Hurts, again, his stat line right there looks really good. Saquon Barkley passed Terrell Davis here for his most rushing yards in a single season. That's with 2,478 yards with combined with the playoffs. So Saquon putting his mark on the season two in his history. But yeah, I mean, you know, the turmoil, AJ Brown, and even we saw a little bit of AJ Brown sparks in the Super Bowl. And it was funny is within that, the Eagles like sideline kind of stuffed that down themselves. You saw Sirianni kind of bark something at him, but then amongst themselves pulled out the Inner Excellence book and kind of mock him a little bit, crack a joke, and then they all kind of just got over it. So that's why I think it's kind of funny with this team and kind of how they've made it through it and done this. But yeah, these two teams now, and this is what happens sometimes. You go in, you win that Super Bowl, you've got some of these guys under contract still, and you can move forward. But then other guys, especially guys,
there's a lot
skilled players that you might have to pay and things like that, decisions need to be made. And this is where a lot of these teams don't become that, you know, franchise that's a dynasty and things like that. That's why it was so the Patriots were so interesting and so you know, good for so long, and what they were able to accomplish with that and not paying a lot of big players and getting things done, and Tom Brady really not taking big money every year either. That was a big factor for the Patriots. Yeah. But both teams need to make a lot of different decisions now coming out of this. Now I've heard a lot of different takes on Jalen Hurts now, especially for the Eagles fans. You know, you got to support the Eagles to take out the Chiefs, which I get. But now you're back to normal. Here come the Eagles fans chirping. Okay, Jalen Hurts, Joe. I'm hearing Jalen Hurts is a top 5 quarterback now, Joe. What's your take on Jalen Hurts now? For one, winning this Super Bowl, does that kind of bump him up now in echelons of view of quarterback play, or is he kind of where you were, or you know, and as far as top 5, where do you see that?
Yeah, I don't see him in the top 5 at all. You know, Super Bowl, whether you win or lose or whatever, that doesn't, to me, it doesn't tell you that, oh, he's one of the best. He's one of the elite quarterbacks in this league. He's a good quarterback, don't get me wrong, but let's be fair about this. All regular season, what does this guy have done? He hasn't, like, you know, taken the league by storm. He hasn't averaged over 300 passing yards every week. He's averaged 200. Around 200 every week during the regular season. The guy has been basically a game manager all year. And they rode the coattails of Saquon Barkley. That's just being honest. Like, that's really what put the Eagles over the hump, got them through the playoffs, into the Super Bowl, and then eclipsing and getting that win. So I still think Jalen Hurts is a good quarterback, but I would argue that he's not top five still in the NFL.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree too. I see where Jalen Hurts. Like, I've been a Hurts supporter. I think he's a really good quarterback, you know. But I think this kind of just shows what his ability is, like what he can do. Big moments, big games. He doesn't back down. That's the one thing I like about him. His whole demeanor the whole time. He's just cool as a cucumber, cold as ice. Doesn't get rattled, it seems like. And that's what's big, and that's what helps win championships, I feel. And so I think that factor was really on point here and kind of showed in this game too as well. Because we even saw with Josh Allen in the championship game, he seemed a little rattled at times in that game versus Mahomes and the Chiefs. You didn't see that at Jalen Hurts at all. You know, yes, they even had the lead, but, I mean, early on in the game, yeah, no pressure, you know. And even Saquon Barkley getting stuffed and things like that, and so that meant more pressure on Jalen Hurts to perform, and he still did. He stepped up. He didn't back down. Stood in the pocket, took some shots, and still connected, and was able, even though they stuffed down Saquon for the most part, able to dish it out to Saquon in the passing game and also get plays done with his legs here. Jalen Hurts was running out of the pocket, much like we've seen from Mahomes throughout the season.
Yeah, Jalen Hurts made the plays necessary for mm-hmm. the Eagles at the right times. Like, mm-hmm. he didn't have to be the guy to do it all. You know what I mean? Like, he didn't have to throw the ball 80 times and win that Super Bowl by himself. So mm-hmm. he did what was necessary as a quarterback of the Eagles, and he executed. When called upon, he executed. So unlike, you know, Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, they were the direct opposite of the Eagles, you know, mm-hmm. offense. And mm-hmm. you saw Mahomes struggle big time because – not only was he getting pressured,
yeah,
but also very, very little time throughout the Super Bowl, guys were open. There wasn't very many opportunities for him, and he had to make some. He did force some throws, and a couple of them turned out to be interceptions. Mm-hmm. You know, he had three total. You know, Zach Vaughn had one, and then two went to Cooper DeJean, the rookie. I mean, the Eagles' defense had two rookies starting and playing in the Super Bowl, their very first year in the NFL. It's absolutely incredible. And they both played exceptionally well.
Mm-hmm. Cooper DeJean had two and then the fumble. Now, again, we just saw a comment here from William Del Pilar. So shout out to William. He says, again, Chiefs injury report, inactive referees. But it was funny, too, because let me get your take even on this. That first drive where A.J. Brown, offensive pass interference, did it cross your mind, say, oh, gosh, here we go. Here's the referees on the Chiefs side again, or did you think that's a legit pass interference?
Honestly, like when I watched the game and we saw the mm-hmm. opening drive for the Eagles mm-hmm. and they went for it and they threw it up to A.J. Brown, I'm like, oh, snap, they got mm-hmm. the first down. This is incredible. Mm-hmm. They show the replay and they're like, oh, no, flag on the play, pass interference. Offense against A.J. Brown, when they showed the replay going down the sideline, I'm like, where is the pass interference? They're hand fighting, don't get me wrong.
They're hand fighting, yeah.
They're both hand fighting, though. Mm-hmm. Nobody's getting a distinct advantage either way.
Right.
So how do you even call that? Let the guys play. Don't get involved in nitpicky type of calls, because that's what's going to end your life after the Super Bowl, because the Eagles fans out there are going to be looking for you. So mm-hmm. I thought initially when I saw that happen, I'm like, oh, here we go. Giving a gift to the Chiefs. Here we go. This is how it's going to go all game. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, after that point, things started to settle down. Now, I don't know if something was said to – the referees off, you know, on the sideline.
Yeah, not
whatever.
Sure or something, but.
Not sure what happened, but, like, it seemed like after that point, they started to call the game fairly.
Fairly,
where it didn't seem like any one team was getting a huge advantage on calls and whatnot for the rest of the game. It was just that one call in particular where it was like, I don't know about that. Like,
Mm-hmm.
That's not pass interference. They're just being physical. So, yeah, you're right. I definitely thought for a second that it might have been one of these things where it was like, oh, geez, here we go. Eagles got to overcome the referees now.
Yeah, and then the Chiefs probably the most penalized they've been in like a long time in this game. They could have had more.
Because there was holding happening all throughout the second half.
I think it was happening all in the second half. I noticed that too as well, and they weren't calling that, especially on some of the big plays when they started to kind of come back to try and score. And then also, just to cover just the one last part here about this game, that forced fumble. So they had the two interceptions. Cooper DeJean had one, and then Zach Bond, but then the forced fumble by Williams. But that was a clear hands to the face of the quarterback here, you know, and Patrick Mahomes, he blasted him. When I saw that shot, I'm just like, oh, man, yo, he's got his head taken off. But within watching that play, though, too, you also see the holding that was happening, too, by the center on, you know, I think it was Jalen Carter in that game who ended up hitting him in the face here.
Yeah, it was Jalen Carter.
So Jalen Carter. So that should have been probably flags on both and then replay the down, but no flag at all, which I thought was crazy, though, too, because he clearly got blasted in the face.
When Mahomes got blasted in the face, he wasn't a quarterback anymore. He didn't even have the ball. The ball was stripped already. And then he gets hit right in the helmet. No, there shouldn't have been a call. He didn't have the ball in his possession anymore, and it's wrapped. It's over.
Yeah. Yeah, and then after that play, you know, it was signed, sealed, delivered. The place was going nuts. So there we go. The Eagles, they dominate.
Did you hear the war chant that the Chiefs normally do?
Yes, I heard that.
Did you see who it was?
All the Eagles fans doing that.
It was all the Eagles fans mocking all the Chiefs fans.
Oh, yeah, you knew it. I heard it when they were doing it because the Eagles fans they showed up. You want to talk about fans showing up for a Super Bowl and things like that? They were there, and they were singing their dumb Eagle song and all that crap again, you know, going crazy. But you could hear it through the whole stadium. That's how many, I think, were there just representing. So kudos to Eagles fans to get there, too.
It was split in the stadium. Like, it was 50-50 Chiefs and Eagles. But I was asking somebody this question during the Super Bowl. I'm like, all right, at what point, if you're a Chiefs fan, you spent thousands of dollars to go to the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Your team's getting blown out. At what point do you stay for the whole game? Because you paid money. You know what I mean? You paid thousands of dollars to be there. Or is anybody leaving early? You know what I mean? Like, I just kind of like, I wondered if that happened in the fourth quarter. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
I think you're staying, I guess, to watch it. But I mean, you paid for that. I mean, that's like they said the average ticket was $5,000, bro. So I'm like, I'm staying. And then what? After you're still going to some kind of after party, just make me feel better after that. You know what I mean? Drown myself in alcohol or something. You know what I'm saying?
Right. I mean, Super Bowl tickets have never been cheaper this year. They were at anywhere from $2,500 to $3,000. You could get a ticket. Mm-hmm. And they used to be way more expensive. We're talking $5,000-$7,000, like something ridiculous like that.
Yeah.
So I honestly, like, I thought it was okay. For in the very beginning of the game, it was a good game. When it started to get out of hand, where it got one-sided, it was kind of boring to watch. Like, I understand if you're an Eagles fan, it's probably amazing. Like,
it's amazing. It's just full out, you know.
But for the everyday just football fan that was watching the Super Bowl, it was
one-sided. Nobody wants that, right?
One of the worst Super Bowls to watch because it was so one-sided.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of the Seattle Seahawks Broncos game. You know what I mean? When the Legion of Boom just dismantled Peyton Manning and the Broncos, it was very similar.
Yeah, one other thing I'd like to touch on for the Super Bowl, too, is we talked about the Eagles' defense against the Chiefs' offense. Let's talk about the Eagles' offense versus the Chiefs' defense, because we both thought that the Chiefs' defense was going to be the one side of football for them that was going to keep them in the game if it got to a point where they were struggling to score points or sustaining drives. But that, I'll tell you right now, Nick Sirianni and Kellen Moore, the offensive coordinator, both had we talked about Vic Fangio and how he overcame and had a phenomenal game plan. The Eagles on the offensive side, again, had a stellar game plan and executed it. They didn't allow or get discouraged when they tried to run the ball with Saquon and they just weren't really getting anywhere.
Yeah.
We saw that happening. We thought for sure that Steve Spagnuolo and the Chiefs defense were going to make a point in halting or slowing down Saquon Barkley and making Jalen Hurts and that offense throw the ball. And they were successful in that area. But what they weren't successful in is pass defense. There were some wide open guys not even covered at times.
Yep.
You know, Dallas Goedert, wide open in the middle of the field.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody's even
just,
around him.
Misread that one,
I mean, there was guys that were just not only getting open with coverage, but also blown coverages were happening.
Right.
Not as much, but it was there. And Jalen Hurts and that offense, they just they took what was given to them. And they didn't try to make anything more out of it. The Chiefs defense, and this is the other thing, is the Eagles offense early on, if you noticed, they were kind of going up-tempo.
Yeah.
They were up-tempo, and they were doing, you know, they were still huddling, but they were huddling for like 2 seconds, calling the play, boom, break. And they were out there. And the very beginning of the game, because they kept going for it, they went for it on fourth down, they would get the first down. And they keep sustaining drives early on, but keeping that tempo high, it tired out the Chiefs in the first half. Because the Chiefs defense was out there quite often.
Yeah.
And you look and you think about the toll it took on that defense as you as it carried them through the game. By the fourth quarter, guys, Chiefs defense were so gassed that Chris Jones, they said that he hurt his knee and he left the game. Did he hurt his knee or was he just that damn exhausted and said, well, we don't have a shot to come back. He just said, I don't want to play. So, I mean, who knows? But the Eagles and that team, offense, defense, even special teams, kudos to the kicker, Jake Elliott, freaking nailing the field goal whenever called upon. Like, amazing. So, great performance by them. They definitely outshined the Chiefs, and the Chiefs are going back to the drawing board. And like we said before, both teams are going to have to figure out who they can keep, if they can try to keep the key players or not as free agency looms. It's right around the corner, guys. It's a month away. It's about a month away until we get free agency and see what kind of frenzy that's going to be for a lot of teams. So I'm excited for the offseason now, now that we got the Super Bowl done.
Jim,
it's going to be another special one, I tell you.
Yep, and then after this now, we heard the news today. Kellen Moore inks the deal to be the new head coach for the New Orleans Saints. So, yeah, again, the Eagles have to find another offensive coordinator, but they're probably going to, you know, promote from within or whatever. At least trying to run that same type of offense to keep everything the same there. But a lot of decisions to make for them on their side as Super Bowl champions. But the big news, which everybody's been asking about for the last couple of weeks, even too, Travis Kelce, is he going to retire or not? You know, and I don't know. I think, again, he's been saying, yeah, no, I still expect him. Everybody's plan is to keep playing. We get that. You know, I would like to say, you know, I intended to keep working tomorrow, but if something changes, you know, along the lines or
the
something
lottery.
Happens, something like that, yeah. We almost won Super Bowls on the squares, Joe. We were so close.
Oh, dude.
So close. How much on that two-point conversion? You're like, no, they're going to go for two. They are. I'm like, but this is great because the only thing you got to do is stop it. Come on, Eagles, just stop it. And you know they were just like, yeah, whatever. We got the lead. You tried to punch it out, but not really. I'm like, no.
Oh, man.
27
you know
grand
what?
Would have been the number right there, Joe. Just
dude,
like that.
I know.
And I was close.
Like, no way. Because honestly, as it was like about 8-9 minutes in the fourth quarter, I'm like, all right, there's no shot. It's it. You know what I mean? We had 0-0 for our numbers.
Yep.
And right towards the end, man, they score that the Chiefs score that touchdown and they go for two and I'm like, all right, well, let's hope that they don't execute the 2-point conversion. Because if they don't, the rest of the game played out where it would have been a final 0-0. We would have won the final money.
Big money. The big money. Yep, Joe, it'll been nice. But there we go. Travis Kelce here. Again, saying he intends to do this, but then also he also has said that, yeah, and you could see it. He's getting more involved in entertainment, hosting different shows, game shows, things like that. Been in TV shows too as well. I'm sure, you know, Taylor Swift has a little bit to do that with that too as well. His contract, the bare brass tax is he's due $17.5 million in this final season of his three-year extension, or no, of his he's due $11.5 million. Sorry, roster bonus. If he's signed by March 14th here, when the official season starts here, so. The Eagles or the Chiefs, we've seen them walk away from contracts like this. They've been like the team to be like, we're not going to hold on to that guy. Let's just kind of, you know, let him go or whatever, this and this. It being Travis Kelce, though, too, they might just be like, all right, Travis, you know, what do you want to do here? You think you're going to play still? You're not or whatever and this and that. Maybe allow him to walk away if he decides that. But I feel like he still wants to play, but I don't see the Chiefs bringing him back for a few more years, especially with the dip in his production that he had this last year.
Here's what we've heard. We've heard that directly after the Super Bowl, Travis Kelce went into the locker room. Obviously, everybody was bummed, but apparently Travis gave a speech to the whole entire team. And some of the players afterwards were talking to media, and they alluded to, after hearing the speech from Travis, that it sounded to them like he was going to be calling it quits, that he was going to retire. So there's a little bit of kind of, I guess you call them rumors or whatever, but because nothing's ironclad. But you got a little intel from some of the players right after the Super Bowl. If you watch Travis Kelce this year play, he looks like a shell of himself from what we used to see in his prime. And everybody's going to be like, yeah, well, because he's older. Yeah, it makes sense. But I've seen this dude age dramatically in this season.
Mm-hmm.
He's not as quick as he used to be or fast as he used to be. And when he gets off the grass, he's not popping up. He's getting off pretty slowly, you know. So things have probably caught up to him physically. I think mentally, obviously, he would play forever, but physically, I think that's what's taking a toll on him, and that's what's actually kind of forcing him to rethink, a future in playing. So I think it's on his mind. Mm-hmm. I think in the offseason, he's going to really think about it, you know, talk to some people, maybe get some advice from former retirees, and make a decision, I feel like, before we get to that deadline where he's going to be due big-time money. You know the Chiefs don't want to pay it if they don't have to. They need that money to further help the team.
And we talked about the fact that they got Noah Gray right there still, too, so they don't need Travis Kelce there.
Well,
so
they just re-signed Noah Gray to a three-year deal.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they already have been doing – they've been setting things up in place before they even got to this point. So I think they knew something when they gave Noah Gray that extension early on. And now that Travis is really thinking about it, something tells me that it may be the last season we've seen from Travis.
He's got a lot of different avenues. I mean, look at even the New Heights podcast that they've got with him and his brother Jason, too. I mean, that's still very popular and successful right now, too. So,
well, I mean, he's got a lot of different popular.
Yeah, avenues to go through. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he does. But we'll see. We'll see what happens as it plays out. You know, he's got time to think about it. But, again, with one
Not
month,
a whole lot of time.
Yeah, with a month away, we shall see. We shall see what happens. So there's a lot of other exciting headlines that are going to be happening in this offseason before we get to that time. Joe, this past weekend, again, they had the NFL honors. I watched it actually for the first time in a while too. And, I don't know. I wasn't really into it. I think that the jokes, Snoop Dogg Day were just dumb. You could tell they're just written for him and they just poorly delivered. And there was a rough crowd. So I think cracking jokes amongst any of those guys, it seems like none of them like have a funny bone in their body at all. You know what I mean? It was a kind of a rough crowd to kind of feel out. I would have felt terrible to be Snoop Dogg there to try and crack these jokes and things like that. As far as the awards, I think everybody who won the awards, I can't deny that. You know what I mean? Josh Allen MVP, I see that totally. What kind of season he had. Joe Burrow, I thought it was kind of interesting with Joe Burrow's speech, even kind of like, oh, you never want to be nominated twice for these things and stuff, but here I am again. And he was kind of like bummed. He's like, yeah, here, thanks. Yeah, you know what I mean?
He had an argument to be MVP himself too.
Yeah, he did.
You know?
I mean, that was
a lot
that
of people weren't talking about that. For that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people weren't talking about it, but he
I didn't know they were going to give it away an award for like best play or something like that of the year. And Jaden Daniels wins that one with the Hail Mary pass. How about that? So he took two trophies home that night. Offensive Rookie of the Year on top of it too. So kudos to him. I thought that was good. But for me, the biggest story, Hall of Fame snubs, for having the smallest list too out of potential people that you could pick with this list of finalists that they had to. Like, Joe, you and I, we covered this and we were like, with the amount of people on this list that they made finalists, like, you could pick any of these guys. So it's tough to decide. And the fact that, you know, I know they say you need to have 80% of the votes to be able to get in or whatever like that. So you're telling me that all these guys just decided on a lot of these, on basically all of the first ballot, the first guys, first timers, they're like, nope, none of these guys are first ballots. And just went for Sterling Sharp as their one senior that you're allowed. Ignored the coaches and things like that and contributors. So Mike Holmgren at all, it wasn't able to go in at all. And right. Only taking three modern players, which Antonio Gates, I absolutely agree. Jared right. Allen, yes. I agree. Yep. Eric Allen, not so much.
Nah.
But, and even the fact that, again, there was other talent there. Guys where I feel like, I know, and like I said, it must be just a mentality that they have where they feel like there's two different types of – there's two echelons. You have to be a first-time Hall of Famer or blah, blah, blah. And this is an elite group you want to be part of, which I looked up. There's 92 of them, so I don't know how elite this group is when there's 92 of them. And maybe that's elite depending on how many people are actually in. I get that or whatever. I think if you're in, you're in, though. And I feel like Adam Vinatieri, being one of the highest scorers of all time, if not the best kicker of all time, isn't good enough to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. And Eli getting snubbed, I think is what started it off for me here. I was shocked.
I mean, it was absolutely atrocious, honestly. Like, I don't even know what the conversations were. I'd be curious to be a fly on the wall, to be honest, because – what are you guys debating about not putting in Eli Manning to be a first ballot Hall of Famer when your list really wasn't that stacked? There was definitely really good players on that list.
Good players.
You bring up Eric Allen. And we even looked at the numbers. We looked at the all-time numbers for corners and defensive backs. And Eric Allen wasn't even close to being on above the threshold that you need to be considered Hall of Fame or best all-time. So for him to get in is blasphemy. Not that he's not a really good player. He was in his time. He was a really good player. But we're talking about elite status to make it to the Hall of Fame. And like you mentioned, Adam Vinatieri, how is he not in the Hall of Fame? It's absolutely asinine. It's ridiculous that the all-time best kicker didn't make it in his first ballot. Yeah. Eli Manning, he leads. He's top 10. In several categories, all time. It's not like, oh, well, you know, he's kind of okay. No, all time, he's in the top 10 in several categories. How is he not a first ballot Hall of Famer when you put them against some of the guys that you put in?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? It's just so frustrating as a football fan. When you look at the finalist list, right, like we always do every year, and we kind of break it down, we're like, all right, well, I could see this guy make it, that guy make it, blah, 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 pros and cons. But those guys, and Terrell Suggs, for him not to make it, he's top three in sacks all time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
What? Like, how yeah. does he not? So those three players right there deserve to be first ballot Hall of Famers, and they got shafted.
They got shafted. Just
because,
yep.
Is it just because it's first ballot, or is there some kind of underlining reason that these voters didn't put these guys in? It's absurd.
Yeah, it is absurd. Sal Palantonio is one of those voters, and he was all for Eli Manning. And what's funny is because representatives of the team stand up and they make the case for that particular player. So there was, you know, representation for Eli, but I guess there wasn't enough. And I know going into this, there was going to be some hard debate, just like there has been for the past, you know, time since he, even when he was playing, but then now since he's retired. Just looking at his numbers quick again, because they tried to say his career or his regular season numbers are pedestrian compared to even his postseason and what he did. Yes, he won two Super Bowls, so he's got to be considered for that. But if you look at his career, completion percentage, 60%, 57,023 yards, 366 touchdowns, 244 INTs, 37 game-winning drives, 4 times Pro Bowler, 2 times Super Bowl champion and MVP. All right? On average, in a 17-game average season, 3,988 yards, 26 touchdowns to 13 INTs. I would take that any day with any quarterback. His best season, 4,432 yards, 62.6%, 35 touchdowns, 14 INTs. Because they tried to say he's never had an elite season either as well to be considered one of the best or this and that too as well. Never led the league in passing either and things. Well, I put into some comparisons too, Joe. We've talked about a couple of these guys just to throw them out there quick. Joe Namath, Terry Bradshaw. Terry Bradshaw, 2-time Super Bowl MVP, 4-time Super Bowl winner, 1-time All-Pro. All right? 14 years he's played in the league, 27,989 yards total, 51.9 completion percentage, 212 touchdowns, 210 INTs.
Pretty How much are these 50-50. Guys in the Hall of Fame?
If you look at an average 17-game season for Terry Bradshaw, it would look like 2,832 yards, 21 touchdowns, 21 INTs.
How are they in the Hall of Fame?
Exactly. Very average. Joe Namath, our buddy Broadway Joe here. We brought him up as well. Going to the Super Bowl and having an AFL championship as well, winning the Super Bowl MVP once, not even, he made the Pro Bowl 5 times, All-Pro once, 13 years. Career yards, 27,663 yards, 173 touchdowns, 220 INTs, and a 50% completion percentage. So yeah. Way more INTs than touchdowns. Won one Super Bowl. And in that game, too, he did not play very well either as well. I was going to bring up some of that, but then I didn't want to get too crazy into it. But he wasn't the reason why they had won that game. If anything, the MVP should have went to the kicker, who actually kicked 3 field goals. Jim Turner, 3 field goals, which was majority of the points to give them the victory 16-6 against the Baltimore Colts. And if you looked at Joe Namath's average, if he played 17 games in a season, 3,359 yards, 21 touchdowns, 27 INTs. So again, Hall of Famer, first ballot, by the way, these guys are first ballot Hall of Famers too. So they're in that elite class and Eli Manning isn't. So just a little thing.
It's funny because you said they're in the elite class. That's kind of hilarious. For Hall of Fame standards now. You just listed off their stats. You projected them in a 17-game season what their stats would be, and they are by far the worst stats that you would have. How could you be considered Hall of Fame worthy? Makes no sense.
Mm-mm. All right, we've got a comment in here with All the Way. All the Way, pleasure to have you on the show here. Manning is not a first ballot Hall of Famer, even amongst his peers, unlike comparing him to different eras. Manning, it wasn't even a top 5 quarterback. I think in the era, I think he was even too, you know, around that time. And he was there with Ben Roethlisberger, who was in the top of his game as well. And then he says he's never an All-Pro, never got a single MVP. you tell me, I mean, some of the MVPs, I think even Cam Newton said, if Eli Manning gets a gold jacket, then he deserves two. Cam Newton he got a league MVP 1 year. Is Cam Newton a Hall of Famer? Is he a first ballot Hall of Famer? No. Is he even a Hall of Famer at all? I don't think so.
No.
And you can't have some of the games and big games moments in this league without Eli Manning. Some of the biggest plays in the Super Bowl ever, too, Eli Manning. You know, and the fact, like I brought it up about Jalen Hurts, cold as ice, stood in. He was an Iron Man. You know, if it wasn't for being benched at one time from McAdoo, like he's probably beating Brett Favre for most consecutive games started. And that's dealing with injuries and everything as well. And if you look at the roster that he had, some of these MVPs, if you look at some of the players that are on this roster and these Hall of Famers, they have future Hall of Famers too as well on the roster. If you look at this Eagles team and you put like Eli Manning on this Eagles team that just currently won, you don't think Eli Manning's taking them to the Super Bowl without an A.J. Brown, you know, a Devonta Smith? When is the Giants ever had anybody like that? The one career year, I think, was 2015 when he had Odell Beckham Jr. Who besides mm-hmm. Odell Beckham Jr., though? You know what I mean? Are you kidding me? All right, here he goes. He's got something else, too, as well. He's bringing up Namath. Namath and Bradshaw played in a different era where receivers could be chucked all the way down the field and then got crippled by safeties and were essentially criminals out there on a work release. Okay. And then what else does he say? At best, Manning gets in year 10. Yeah, I don't think so as well. I mean, again, maybe it's my bias. I get it, but that's why this thing is debatable, though, too. So, I mean, I get what some people are saying and some things, but if you look at some of the dudes that are in there, and I get maybe different eras and stuff like that, but if you see them play, like, the proof is in the pudding, though. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If you look at even the way Bradshaw played, it wasn't like this era. The era was totally different, and that's what defined the way he was. You knew what he was. He was reckless with the ball. And he had a lot of good players on his team. Franco Harris to hand the ball to as well. I mean, are you kidding me? That defense to rely on? The steel curtain? You think they're not winning those championships without that? I mean, that's on top of it. And the only thing that helps argue with this now, too, and which will maybe with what All the Way is saying, maybe push Eli Manning down further, Joe, is because next year Drew Brees and Phillip Rivers are now up for consideration for the Hall of Fame in 2026. Mm-hmm. 2027, Ben Roethlisberger is up. And then 2028, Tom Brady is up. So in these next couple consecutive years, you're going to have more of these quarterbacks that played around the same time and era to where what All the Way is saying, he probably feels top five quarterbacks better than Eli Manning. They're probably getting in. So then does that push Eli Manning back further, which it potentially can now.
Yeah, potentially can. I mean, you got Drew Brees, who is seen as one of those elite type of guys when his time in the NFL. So, like,
oh, absolutely.
There could be some. There's definitely going to be some. You know, kind of definitely going to be debates. There's definitely going to be conversations with all the voters and everything. So it'll be fun to watch, to say the least. because now what are you going to do now that you have Eli Manning is going to be involved in that, you're going to have Drew Brees. Drew Brees is, to me, honestly, Drew Brees has to be first time.
He's got
to
be first ballot now, right? I mean, right? You would think.
He's well above average for Hall of Fame mm-hmm. quarterbacks. And depending on what category you look in,
right,
too. He's kind of like
he's led in career touchdowns, I think, too, at one point.
Top
him and Brady going back and forth.
Conversation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All time.
Mm-hmm.
So you have that, and I'm trying to look up right now. I'm trying to look up some stats on Drew Brees. And
If you got Drew Brees next year,
Drew Brees
right,
is second
then you're looking
all time
at Drew Brees. Yeah, Yeah, because he was battling out, I think, even that with Tom Brady, but then also with touchdowns, I think, too. He was battling back and forth with Brady, and then I think Brady surpassed him again.
Because he's second all time touchdowns.
Yep. So he's there, and that's what I think. So if you look at next season, next year when you look at these NFL honors and who's up for the Hall, it's got to be Drew Brees. So then you're looking at Eli Manning and Phillip Rivers. They're going to take a step back because how many quarterbacks do they usually induct in the same class? And it's not a lot. So Phillip Rivers, even right. when you put right. him next to Eli Manning now, how will people decide these two guys and their careers? How far down will Eli go and how far down will Phillip Rivers go?
Here's the crazy thing is that whole idea with Rivers versus Eli, like Rivers actually deserves to be in the Hall of Fame before Eli because he has better numbers.
He has better numbers, but he had a lot of better players on his team though too.
Yeah, but that
you know what I mean?
The
Hall of Famer Antonio Gates.
When you have these conversations, they're going to be looking at what they did in terms of production, in terms of what they did. They're not going to really look back too much on, well, who did he have at wide receiver? Who did they have at offensive line? Who
did
they have in the backfield? Like,
but what they also do is championships. How many championships did he win?
That to me is ridiculous.
Which
Super Bowl shouldn't even count.
I mean, I get that too.
It shouldn't even count.
Because I've defended Phillip Rivers because of that too as well. Because, again, look at who he's playing against in that era. Every time he made it to the playoffs, which was a lot, he's facing off against Hall of Famer Peyton Manning, Tom Brady in the playoffs. Like, are you kidding me? When you're facing these guys every single year, it's tough.
Right.
Look at what we see with Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen. They're facing Patrick Mahomes every single year or Joe Burrow, and they get knocked off. You know what I mean? So what will time tell about these quarterbacks if they never sniff a Super Bowl? But we will see, Joe. I mean, that's one of the things that, you know, kind of bothered me a little bit here, but who knows? Again, it's probably just my bias coming through. We definitely appreciate the comments all the way out there. Thank you for joining the show. So Joe, big news that's in the NFL scene in the headlines right now. What's next for Aaron Rodgers here, Joe? Aaron Rodgers, we're hearing all the things now that it is official.
That question got answered already. Yeah, he will not be a Jet.
Well, we already know that.
The Jets have informed him to pack his bags, and Devontae is going to be following him too. So for Rodgers, now it's going to be interesting. How badly does Aaron Rodgers want to continue playing? Because if he's thinking that he can go to a team that could turn into a contender if he signs there, or if he could even hop on a team that maybe like Minnesota, maybe because they're going through a little bit of a changing of the guard. At least that's what it sounds like right now, because you have the probability of Sam Darnold maybe returning to Minnesota, but if they can't get a deal done to Minnesota's liking or whatever financially, they might move on from Darnold. They might just let him go to free agency. And then what if J.J. McCarthy, they want to give him another year of development, another year, a healthy year to develop. And maybe what could be better than to sit behind Aaron Rodgers, you know, another veteran presence and a guy who's done it better than most people, and especially in his prime. I mean, that's an idea. Maybe Minnesota might look into him if they can't sign Sam Darnold. But I think for Rodgers, I think it's going to be very difficult to find a partner and sign to be a starter. That team is on the rise, or that team is going to be a contender next year. I think it's going to be next to impossible to find that.
Yeah.
He thought it's he had too. That in New York. He thought that if he went there, and then eventually they got Devontae Adams and that offense with the defense, and he thought that they could turn that into a contender. It was just they turned it into a dumpster fire.
Right. So, I mean, the main thing with him, I think, the tracker is if he's going to just decide if he wants to retire or not. But if he feels like he has the will to play, he's got to follow by the rules now of everybody else, because they're not putting up with him telling them what he wants to do. We saw that now with the Jets when they gave him the ultimatum. When Aaron Glenn comes in here and he's right in the ship, we heard this from Diana Rossini. She broke the news that the Jets told him, hey, listen, if you want to be part of this team, you're going to show up to all the training camps and you're not going to be on the Pat McAfee show doing interviews and talking all this bull crap. You're going to get in line. And apparently that wasn't a thing. So they're like, all right, so see you later. Get the step in. And so you think that other teams now are going to do the same type of thing? He doesn't have Aaron power Rodgers, over teams anymore.
If you know Aaron Rodgers and you give him a demand, it's just like Aaron Glenn taking the stance of Bill Belichick. When Bill Belichick first took over the Patriots, it was his way or the highway. Like, there was just no bones about it. Like, you did what he told you or you're gone. And that's where Aaron Glenn is coming into there and just kind of putting his foot down, saying, you know what, we're not going to sign guys that you want us to sign. We're not going to create an offense the way you want the offense to run. This is the way it's going to be. So either you get on board or we'll just move on from you. And they've chose to move on. They've parted ways. Rodgers, I think there's definitely going to be teams interested, especially teams that are in major need of quarterback. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at the top of the draft now in a year where the quarterbacks are not very strong. I mean, you're basically rolling the dice on whatever quarterback you do take. There's pros and cons to everybody. And I know the favorites are Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders right now, but there are some other quarterbacks that are making a little bit of noise as we get closer to the draft to keep an eye out for. So are one of these teams going to be like, you know what, like Tennessee, like do they bring in Rodgers? Will Levis can kind of like learn underneath him for a year and maybe they retry the Will Levis project again. Do they feel comfortable in that? Are they going to take the best player available instead of forcing and just taking that quarterback because right now they desperately need it? So there's a lot of decisions to be made going forward, especially for Rodgers. What does he want to do? I think he still wants to continue playing. I really do. I don't think he's lost the fire, so to speak. I think he wants to play for a couple more years. But what team, and it's going to be a team that is in need of quarterback. It's the only way I could see him going to anybody and starting right away. You know, so all these quarterback need teams. Now it changes the dynamic now because you have Rodgers that's going to be a free agent. You have Sam Darnold possibly going to be a free agent. And then all indicators are saying that the Atlanta Falcons are going to cut Kirk Cousins. So he'll be available too. So all these quarterback needy teams now, do you go the veteran direction or do you say, you know what, we're picking high in the draft anyway. I know it's a weak class, but we're just going to take the guy we like and move forward. So very interesting to see how teams view these quarterbacks that might be available and what direction they might choose to go. Do they go youth or do they go veteran presence for the time being?
Yeah, and a lot of that circles around the Vikings. What's going on with the Vikings? How do they view J.J. McCarthy when he is in healthy now? Because, yes, they had Sam Darnold in there. He got the starting job, and especially after J.J. McCarthy being injured. But some other people brought up the fact that why'd they go get Daniel Jones then if they really were sold on J.J. McCarthy even still being there? Was it a fact that, hey, maybe they're not sure now they got him in training camp and they're like, whoa, all right, well, maybe we'll bring another guy in there and maybe this guy will be the guy. So if they go and get like an Aaron Rodgers and things like that, they might answer your questions too, that maybe J.J.'s not ready and they need that veteran in there to somebody to kind of – because they feel like they can win now too. Look what Sam Darnold brought them to, you know, in just one season. If they had a veteran like Aaron Rodgers there, that could be good with this team that they've had there. But will it create waves though too, that Aaron Rodgers – that comes with Aaron Rodgers, you know? And if the fact that Kirk Cousins, again, if he becomes available – he's been tied to Minnesota too, which is easy because he used to play there too. But I mean, they cut him loose too. So what that's like just bringing him back. You already know what you had there. So I think Minnesota being involved in all this quarterback situation, I think is very intriguing. So I think what they decide to do with their quarterback room, I think is the big deciding factor with some of this stuff. Then it falls
to be honest,
the Steelers and the Titans and things like that.
Well, to be honest, with Minnesota, I mean, the reason why they brought in Daniel Jones is because they needed insurance behind Sam Darnold. J.J. was still hurt. He was done for the year. They didn't have a backup, if you will, to Sam Darnold. So they had to do something, and that's why they brought in Daniel Jones for this year. You know, all reports are indicating right now is that Sam Darnold and the Vikings are trying to work on a deal currently. So they're trying to keep him. And that right there tells you everything you need to know. There's no rush to put J.J. McCarthy in the lineup. The guy's on a rookie contract. It's better for him anyways because even coming into the draft, people had questions like, he hasn't played that much. He doesn't have enough experience. He needs to develop more. This gives him a little – this gives him more time to develop another year, a healthy year to develop under maybe Sam Darnold again or somebody else. So I think the Vikings are playing this very efficiently, and I think it would be a smart decision to bring Sam Darnold back. You already know what he can do for you. He was one of the better quarterbacks in the NFC. I mean, just take away those two poorly played games, and everybody's raving about this guy. Mm. Oh, my God, you see Sam Darnold this week? Oh, my God, just the connection with the receivers, everything, the points they racked up, it's all there. So why go away from something that's working? And I think that's what Minnesota is definitely looking into is they'd like to bring Sam Darnold back. But if the price is too high and they don't want to match it, then they're going to go a different direction. Will that be J.J. McCarthy? Not necessarily because I don't think he's ready to take over the job. So he could be. Maybe another offseason, another, you know, more time to work out and work with the coaches and learn the playbook and all that. Maybe he will be ready. But I think this is something where they want to make sure that they have a veteran quarterback there with J.J. to compete against, and may the best quarterback win.
Yep, and as far as Aaron Rodgers, again, I think landing spots are limited. So, and I mean, I think he's got the will to play still, but being older and with the baggage that comes with there, I think landing spots are very limited. So, I mean
I think anybody that needs a quarterback right now needs a starter. I think that those are all.
They would probably consider them possibly, but I mean, again, like you said, it's not going to be a contender. And I think that Davante Adams, they're not exactly linked at the hip anymore. So I think teams will look at Devontae in a different light as not, you know, they're not going to be like, hey, let's get both these guys, you know, and it's going to make it work now too, again, which is tie them together. I think any team that looks at, you know, needing a wide receiver, that, you know, he is a veteran and a little older now too, he wants to go to a contender. I think by any means, you know, a lot of teams will consider Davante Adams and not exactly that they're tied together.
I think they still would be tied together, to be honest. I think they're still – Devontae's going to follow where Rodgers goes, is simply put. Here's the caveat of it all is it's going to come down to price tag. How much – do you have to play Rodgers being a 40-plus-year-old quarterback who you have no idea, is he going to play for one – are you going to start signing one-year deals and then re-up every year after that if he wants to still play? Or Devontae is mid-30s as a wide receiver in the NFL. Now, granted, he's still a capable wide receiver. He's good. But you're not going to get paid $40 million a year. That ship has sailed now at wide receiver.
Right.
Davante Adams is a good player, but it's going to come down to where he's going to have to scale his price kind of a lot for whatever team does sign him. I do kind of envision him following Rodgers unless Rodgers ends up on a team that's already stacked at wide receiver. But I'm waiting to see where Rodgers signs first. And then I wouldn't be surprised if Devontae follows.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it could be potentially different. But because I could look at a team like, say, the Chargers that need even another wide receiver. I mean, yes, they've got Ladd McConkey and things like that. But they, I think, are obviously a contender even, too. We've got a good quarterback in Justin Herbert, too. Devontae would probably like to go to that team. They've got enough money to spend on him. Even the Bengals, if they don't go with T. Higgins, what if they sign at a veteran minimum Davante Adams on with that team with Jamar Chase things like that. I mean, we've seen things like that happen. Look at DeAndre Hopkins going to the Chiefs.
Yeah, I don't see that any of that happening. Because for one, he's not going to sign for league veteran minimum. You're going to have to pay him at least $10 to $15 million a year.
Well, again, the way he says he cares about his legacy and what he does, and he wants a championship. They do whatever they do to try and get that. You know what I mean?
Well, then obviously doesn't matter not anymore. Because you got traded. You were willing to go to the Jets.
Oh, I thought he thought that Rodgers was. I thought they thought that they still had an opportunity to do something with that, which it just failed. You know what I mean? People always have a game plan before they go in, and then they get punched in the mouth, and then the game plan changes itself. But speaking about trades and things like that, though, too, and movements, it comes out now, too, that Deebo Samuel now demands a trade. What's funny, too, is thinking about this, we already knew that the writing was on the wall with Deebo anyways. We talked about this back when Brandon Ayuk was a holdout and all this other nonsense. Mm-hmm. And I've also heard that, around the trade deadline, too, that Deebo was potentially on the move. The 49ers were talking, but if it wasn't for the injury, of Ayuk and things, the injuries that were compounding onto the 49ers at the time, they probably would have tried to pull the trigger and try to get Deebo out of there in week 8. But with the injuries, they had to hang on to him for some kind of chance that never happened. And I know the contract situation with Brock Purdy is lingering. And I know we're going to be debating and people are going to be talking about that all offseason too as well. How much do you pay a Brock Purdy, who's not exactly elite, but he's a good quarterback. He's done a lot with this 49ers team, but you got to pay him something here. But you can't hold on to like a Deebo, especially who's been injury ridden, and it's not constant injuries here. And even the production has now taken a step down too as well on top of it.
You talk about production. How about the dropped footballs this year by Deebo?
In key moments. They won a few of those games where he was there, that changes things. It does. They're in.
Yeah, and here's the thing is Deebo Samuel, he's still 29 years old. He hasn't even gone over the 30 mark.
Right,
he's not
over 31, the 30 mark.
32, 33 years old. So he's still got a number of years to give to the NFL, to produce for whatever team that is. It sounds like conversations were had behind closed doors with John Lynch as the GM and everything, and kind of noticing the decline with Deebo, and I don't think the conversation went very well, and that's why we're starting to hear now that Deebo Samuel wants to be traded, because it doesn't sound like the Niners had him in their future plans and that they were even contemplating on moving on from him anyway. So now that Deebo has requested this trade, where are you going, Deebo? Because you've been seen as a scheme type of wide receiver where you went to the Niners, you fit that offense so well with Kyle Shanahan, and he needs a guy of your skill level of being able to run the ball and catch the ball, So where are you going to go where you can mimic that? There's not a whole lot of offenses out there that you technically fit into. You might have to just play slot wide receiver only. I think he's definitely a good player to where you can integrate into any offense, but are you going to be better at catching the football? Are you, going to be able to run routes the way they want you to run them? I think you can acclimate to an offense, but I think it's going to be a little different depending on what team that he does seek out.
Yeah, and again, I didn't look and see if, he has a no trade clause here too, so he's able to kind of make that and like release that and then become, pick the team he wants to go to. I know there's a bunch of different destinations people expect, and he is openly, it was Super Bowl week, guys out there in the media talking, doing interviews, and he was caught, saying something about, hey, I think next year the Bengals or the Broncos could be a scary team. He really loves Bo Nix and Patrick Surtain on the defensive side. They're really good defense. And a lot of people are kind of putting two together with, you know, Sean Payton's offense. Add a little Debo in there. A couple of, you know, jet sweeps with him, whatever. He's a kind of a couple tool type of player here. Not expected to do everything for them because they've still got Cam Sutton, some players there. So add a little Debo to that team and Sean Payton's offense, and that might work for – so maybe potentially going to the Broncos.
Yeah, it's going to be depending on the price, though, too. Like, I'm curious to find out because whoever does trade for Debo, they're going to have to agree to a new deal.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you're trading for him just for this season, what's the point?
What's the point?
You're going to be – whoever does trade for him are going to invest in him long term. So with the Denver Broncos, it's an intriguing destination for him. I think he would work in that offense. And I know Sean Payton would integrate some different wrinkles in there to kind of get him involved into the running game. But this is the Broncos team that is not only on the rise, but why would you want to go older? Why would you want to use more capital to sign Debo Samuel and trade compensation that you're going to use in this upcoming draft? Like, they are a team that overachieved in my eyes this past season. They were right there in the playoffs and everything, and they just, you know, for a rookie quarterback, again, we've seen this twice this year. Jaden Daniels in Washington and the Broncos.
The Broncos, yep.
So I like the idea of Debo to the Denver Broncos, but at the same time, would it really be logical for the Broncos organization to bring in a older vet wide receiver at this point when you have a young team that's growing and maturing together? You have some young wide receiving weapons. I know one of them is Vele. His last name is Vele. He looks good. 6'4" wide receiver, has speed, has hands. Look for him to kind of continue being involved. But I would hesitate a little bit, I guess, by adding him to Denver just because they have something nice growing there in the organization with a youth movement. Bringing a veteran, sure, it makes sense. But the compensation and the investment on top of that you're going to have to make when they've already spent big dollars on their offensive line, you know, obviously Sutton, you know, they re-signed him. So, I don't know. I mean, it makes sense, but at the same time, I don't know if it's the right move for Denver.
Right, right. And so as far as even Debo Samuel goes, like you said, he hasn't hit 30 yet, but I mean, with the mileage, with the injuries on top of it.
He'll probably be 30 as we get to the season.
Yeah, exactly. But again, I see him as kind of going, he's still going to want his money, but trying to do the best to get into a competitive situation to where he can try and get back. Because, you know, even watching the wide receiver show, how you know, upset he was that he got to the Super Bowl twice and was unable to achieve, you know, a Super Bowl a victory here. And calling out, you know, that, hey, my time in here with the 49ers is over. I'm not giving up the dream, so I got to try and go somewhere else where I can be effective to do that. So I think a few different teams would do that.
I got to say, there's one team in particular that is like, right at the tip of my tongue, and I don't know how no one's talked about this already, but Debo may be going to New England. I mean, the Patriots, they're in need of wide receivers. And especially if you're able to get a guy like Debo, you already know what you're getting. You're getting a guy who's already proven in the league.
Yeah.
You know, and think of some of the wrinkles you could do with Drake May in the backfield, too. So I think the Patriots make a ton of sense. Jimmy, what do you think about the Giants? Do you think they would bring in Debo to play slot for them?
No, I don't think so. Again, I don't think they go that route. I mean, I don't know. I think they're still trying to build something here, and I don't think – I get it's definitely an upgrade of what you have right there in that wide receiver room. It would be interesting, but again, but you've got Malik Nabers there and Debo. I mean, that's something for whatever quarterback you do have. So, I mean, I get that. But again, what are you willing to pay And what he, what's he, you know?
I don't think it's going to cost a lot.
When you restructure that contract, hopefully that's not too much, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the Giants definitely could afford it.
They could afford it at least right now at this point.
In terms of compensation, I'm thinking like fourth rounder.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think you're going to end up getting. Or maybe even it's going to be a lower pick because he is on the brink of 30. And you know that's going to be part of the conversations in the negotiations where teams are going to be like, well, you know, he is 30. He has an injury history. So maybe we'll give you a fifth rounder or a sixth rounder.
It'll be interesting where he goes. And if they do, it go NFC again, though. Again, because I'm just like you a lot of times. I like to lean towards the AFC side. Like if they do trades, they're going to trade out of conference. Yeah, you know what I mean? Pittsburgh.
Steelers, you know, makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, if he has no pick, I mean, again, it could go anywhere. It could be the Titans, you know what I mean?
Could be so. Tennessee. Could be, you know, the Colts. Could be Jacksonville.
Yeah. Anything. You know, anything could be, goes.
Maybe so. Kansas City. Like, you know, who knows?
Yep. Yep, yep, yep. And again, Commanders got a lot of money though too. So I mean, who knows? Maybe they decide to go and get Deebo too on top of it. Have Terry McLaurin and everything, and a crazier wide receiver room too. I mean, you know, who knows? But that's the thing though. We got the off season coming out, Joe. So it's like the next season of the current season. Like the off season still doesn't end. You know what I mean? Doesn't end still. So this is the next group of conversations and debate. So it never ends. It never ends for us. We go year round just about with this whole thing. Because again, this is almost as just as exciting as the regular season with the stuff that goes behind the scenes and the wheeling and dealing and the guys that are no longer going to be on teams anymore. Where are they going? There's going to be some shifts, you know what I mean? And definitely guys no longer on rosters that sign 1 year deals. You know, we got the Russell Wilsons of the league too. You know, who's
right?
He said he'd like to be with Pittsburgh, but we don't know that for sure and things. So he could be on the move. A lot of people see in him putting two and two together with the Raiders. You know, being there reunited with Pete Carroll and things like that. So we'll see.
With Pittsburgh's situation, Pittsburgh doesn't even know what they're going to do. Like, there's been rumors out of Pittsburgh that they're so undecided on which quarterback they want to keep that they're not sure what direction they're going in. Now, if you listen to Russell Wilson's camp, they're going to tell you, hey, we're in negotiations. We're actually hammering out a new deal, you know. And then you don't hear too much from Justin Fields' camp, though. You don't hear any rumors or conversations being had with Pittsburgh about maybe returning. So it makes me kind of like I'm just stuck on the fence and I don't know which way to lean for Pittsburgh because it sounds like they're going to sign the older vet in Russell Wilson. But at the same time, a team that had success with Justin Fields, who's only 26 years old.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you sign the young guy and just work with him going forward? So I'm perplexed. I don't know what Pittsburgh's going to do, and I'm waiting to see what in fact happens because they got to make a decision soon. They got a month to do it because free agency is right around the corner, and they got to sign somebody. They got to either keep Russell Wilson or Fields and make a decision because – other teams are going to be interested in either one of those guys if they become available.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, Joe. So, all right, that's it for the show tonight. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Joe, tell everybody where they can catch this episode and more like this one across Grumblings Media.
Yeah, head over to YouTube, guys. Grumblings Media right over there. Make sure you hit the subscribe button. Hit the thumbs up while you're there. Share it to everybody that you know and love. And don't forget to drop in the comment section below. Listen, we really appreciate everybody out there that dropped their comments. And we got to them, and that's what makes the show fun. We're interactive. We're trying to stay that way, and we look forward to seeing many more of you in the near future.
All right, that's it for us. We'll see you guys next one.